evening, Stay Trippers. Welcome along to the bunker. I've forgotten to do the intro song, but then again, I'm down to 3% battery, so I'm really rattling along with this intro. In tonight, we talk about Van Dijk, we talk about Liverpool, Southampton, we talk about... what were we talking about? We were talking about MasterChefs, we were talking about... something else. There was a question about Kate I completely forgot about to ask as well. Anyway, that's that. So in tonight we've got Ray, we've got Andy, we've got Gav, we've got myself, Phil, and up now we have an advertisement from our sponsor Skillzone, the home of the 2017 World Games.
So, Kevin, what would you say your main skills are?
Rugby, soccer, Gaelic, tennis, climbing, basketball, shooting, golf, baseball, and hanging tough.
Test your sports skills at Skillzone, Ireland's first multi-sports indoor circuit. Be the first to get 100 points and you'll also win €10,000. Skillzone Sandyford. See skillzone.ie. T's and C's apply.
Okie dokie, lads. Let's get this podcast on the way. We've started recording here.
Oh, so sorry.
Is that all right?
Sorry about that, Phil.
Very right? Unprofessional, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not great said here, tutorial
of editing.
Northside has wrecked the shop as ever.
Show them how to edit that there, Phil.
Fucking Northside has wrecked this thing as ever.
Right, lads.
45 minutes on the week ahead. We've nothing to talk about in the past because nothing's happened, with the exception of Emre Can playing left back for Germany. We've talked about Gomez being the world's best centre back. Coutinho managing to get through a match unscathed for Brazil. We've got Lallana back, we've got Mane back. Mane's managed to shake off a hamstring injury in world record time, and Lallana is back, which means that with the exception of Cloyne, we've got a fully fit squad. So the first thing I want to talk about tonight, lads, is Virgil van Dijk is at Anfield on Saturday. How excited are you hoping to see this lad play? Because like, we've been hearing about him all summer long. We've signed him. We've just been very nice about this and let him stay at Southampton for another season.
Not told Southampton.
Like, well, see, what people don't know is that transfers are a fluid situation. Oh. And there's a deal agreed and in place. We've agreed terms. He did a medical. We agreed the deal. What people don't know is we agreed the deal and he's signing for us on the 1st of June next year. This will happen.
I think if I worked in the club, I'd be tempted. Yeah, I could lose my job, but I'd be tempted to go into the away dressing room with a Van Dijk Liverpool shirt and just lash it on one of the pegs and see if he lashes it on and comes out.
What's the odds he runs out and claps the cop and he comes out of the tunnel? And well, when his name gets called, there's a big cheer from the cop.
Well, that's just a big fucking cheer.
If Liverpool are winning kind of by two or three goals late in the game, you know, his name is going to be sung.
There'll be a bit of tomfoolery going on there, definitely, yeah.
So all the efforts that Mike Gordon has made to repair relations with Southampton will go flying out the window on Saturday, basically.
We're the fans.
All joking aside, lads, I want to talk about Southampton first because they're obviously managed by ex-Liverpool manager Maurizio Pellegrino, who obviously helped us seal the deal for Virgil van Dijk when he took over.
Yeah.
Because he would have needed the money anyway.
He needed the money.
So you have to sell the boy.
What people don't realise is that Danny Ings is moving to Southampton in January as part of the deal that was agreed last season.
Gomez is already gone.
Gomez went.
Yeah.
But he was allowed to stay until Van Dijk came in.
All right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We give him Ricky Lambert as well. We can give him.
Well, Ricky Lambert's still at the club. People don't know that as well. he went on loan to West Brom. He's still floating around. Him and Markovic are still training out in Melwood at the moment. Having a game ahead.
Markovic's gas, isn't it?
Ah.
It's fucking gas.
He might get a run in these 44 games in 13 days that are coming up. But, right, so looking at Southampton, right, I had a quick look at them last night, and they've scored 9 goals in 9 games this season, right? Top scorers are Manolo Gabbiadini with 2 and Charlie Austin with 2, as far as I know. Or Gabbiadini is 3 and Charlie Austin has 2.
9 goals in a mini game? 11 no, games? No,
11 games. 11 games.
Right, okay. They haven't conceded many, have they?
Well, this is the thing. They've conceded 2 in a game or 3 in a game. And then there's been clean sheets.
Clean sheets, yeah.
So it's if they concede, they tend to concede more than one.
Yeah.
If they score, they rarely score more than one. Right. So they're like the flip side of us. Right. If we concede, we tend to concede 11. And if we don't, we keep a clean sheet. And then obviously if we score 1, we tend to score 101. Or we don't do 1-0s, essentially.
Yeah. And Shane Long hasn't scored for 4 years. He's definitely scoring on Saturday.
He retired and came back.
Yeah.
I'm sure I seen him in a car park just getting some practice in. Just to get a goal.
And Andy were definitely.
Just to get
Andy
a goal saying, on the far side.
And he's going, well, I'm
for an hour still.
Well, looking at them, They've got a decent defensive unit. They've signed a good centre back in Hout, who was to come in and replace Van Dijk when he leaves for Liverpool next season. And they've still got Cedric there, who's a decent fullback. Yeah, Bertrand, who's a decent fullback. Yeah. Foster's form has been all over the shop for them in goal. Now, so that means he's guaranteed to have a world
he's always capable, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he saved a pen last year.
So, lads, the thing I'd say to you is, do you fear them in comparison to Southampton teams from the last couple of years? Because Pellegrino hasn't really done anything with them. They were defensively sound for the last 3 years. They seem to score less goals. If anything, they aren't as fluid in attack as they have been. Andy?
Is Charlie Redden still getting a game for them?
Charlie Redden?
Charlie Redden, yeah.
Yeah. So he's going to make a dog shit of Matip again.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. But other than that, no, I wouldn't be too worried about them. I'd say they're going to set up like every other team that comes downfield.
Well, what they've done in the games against the bigger sides, they tend to play five across the middle, right? It's set up as a 4-2-3-1, but they're playing what's his name, Stephen Davis, the Northern Irish defensive midfielder, as the number
Romeo,
10.
Romeo, is it the player?
Yeah, Romeo, Davis, and then they've gone with Tadic on one side and Redmond on the other side, whatever it is. But they are very deep, and they look to literally play in the counter attack with one forward up. And they've used Long an awful lot in those games because Long will run in behind defenders and run at them all day long.
Yeah.
So you've actually done my homework on Southampton for a change.
I remember I was at the game last year and I do remember Gabby Adini, he was trying to put himself about in that game and he was just getting absolutely nothing out of us and he was getting really frustrated. So had it been the same manager, I wouldn't have been convinced that they'd have started with Gabby Adini again this year. So I'm not so concerned about the threat that they've sort of, I think it's going to follow a similar pattern to some of the games that we've seen sort of post-Tottenham, you know.
Yeah.
The Huddersfield, the Maribor, I think it's going to be quite tight. They're going to, as you say, they're going to be relatively defensive.
Mm-hmm.
They've shown they're capable of keeping clean sheets.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you sort of go with that game plan again? I don't think it's going to be pretty to watch, but I do think we'll break them down.
Right. Okay. So Van Dijk, though, can we get the upper hand against him? He's the world's greatest defender. There's nobody in the world anywhere near as good as Van Dijk, because if there was, we would have signed him.
The biggest loss of the World Cup next year is Van Dijk.
There's no centre backs to the World Cup because Van Dijk isn't gone.
Like, it means you can get the deal done nicely.
No, it
and we don't have to pay an extra $10 million.
The deal is done. I just explained it.
Sorry.
We signed him last year. We just let Southampton keep him for another year. It's about saving face for Southampton.
Just waiting for fucking Danny Ings to be properly fit before he goes there and Joe Nez comes back.
I don't know why they haven't announced this to the press. Because it's done.
Yeah.
In all seriousness though, like you said that he hasn't done much with Southampton. He probably hasn't. He's probably looking to kind of keep a steady ship this season. You know, because you know, you've seen the likes of De Boer going into Crystal Palace trying to change a lot. I think he got four league games. It was a five league games and he was gone. So Pellegrini, is it? I always mix them up.
Pellegrino,
okay. He's probably looking at it and trying to keep his job. You know, the kind of way, you know, steady ship, keep them in around 8th or 9th, and he keeps his job and probably look to push on next season. If I was at Hampton, I'd be looking at the League Cup game they played at Anfield last season. They came in, they played well. They actually did play well that night and got the goal near the end to put it to bed. That's the way I think Southampton should come out and play us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hoping that with everyone more or less fit and raring to go, that we've enough options, not only on the pitch, but coming off the bench, that if we need something different, we will score. And like you said, if we can get an early goal or get one up, they're likely to concede two or three.
Let's move on to us. And the reason I want to move on, last year, Andy, we sat in and we did a podcast preview on the Southampton game and on the run-in to the finishing fourth in the league, right?
Yeah.
And previous to that, in January, we did a podcast on the Southampton game where we were talking about why we don't score against Southampton, right? And the argument was that one time we scored a shitload of goals against Southampton, we played with Origi and Sturridge up front. And I think it ended up being Origi and Sturridge up front as a result of an injury early on in the game, right? Now, in the last game that we played against West Ham, we have some form of two players up front being Sturridge and Firmino. So it wasn't the three up front, it was two, right?
Yeah.
Given that they really haven't changed the defensive setup that much, that they're likely to come and put bodies in front of us, Can you think of any reason why we don't go with two up front and try to break this hoodoo of scoring goals against Southampton at home?
Yeah, well, I'd imagine now this kind of shape change that Klopp has alluded to there, and every fan has tried to understand and write articles about, is going to continue, because it has been shown to be more effective. And we have had a couple of bodies up front. So you expect that to continue.
Doesn't matter, you just keep walking, talking. I'll start the sound, you keep very nosy. What are you doing? I'm not changing what you're saying. I'm not over there to like turn your voice funny or something like that.
No, but when you're talking to me and you turn your head around.
Yeah, I'm never interested in what any of you have to say.
I just hear the home, isn't it, really? Yeah. The missus, you know? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, you know, the old saying, fucking dickhead. you don't tamper too much with a winning team.
Yeah.
And, like, they've won four games in a row, so I can't see that changing too much. It does look like a shape that makes us a bit more solid defensively if we do end up being countered. And also in attack, they just seem to get the bodies in better positions.
Okay, Ray, I'll put the flip side to you. We've got Mane, we've got Salah fit, we've got Firmino fit, we've got all our midfielders fit, right?
Yeah.
We're playing at home. We're likely to have a defence and a team that wants to sit back deep against us, right? So looking at that, is there an argument here to go fucking Mongo attacking in this sense, right? Play Wijnaldum, Coutinho, one of Chan and Henderson, and then play the three boys up front, because those lads are like Southampton are going to sit against us.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bet against that being the case on Saturday, that he goes that positive, because I think we've kind of got the Tottenham game sort of out of our system to a large degree, and I think given that we've had problems with them in the past, why wouldn't you just really go at them early doors and try and put a couple of goals past them, because the longer they stay in the game and the longer they're at 0-0, then their confidence is going to grow and grow. So, you know, we've got some threats there. The threats that we've got up the top of the pitch now in Mane, Salah, Firmino to a lesser extent, jury's still out for me on his effectiveness. And he gets a lot of praise about his work rate off the ball and what he's doing in the team, and that's why Klopp obviously loves having him up there. I just sort of, particularly at home when we need players to put the ball in the back of the net, it frustrates the hell out of me sometimes. So, you've got to put, you know, Wijnaldum. I'd have Wijnaldum in the team because he's just got this tendency, this knack of scoring goals at home. So, I'd be as positive as we can be, to be honest with you. I think we've got, like, in theory, this is probably like the easiest of the three games on paper, but it's important you win that first game to give you that kind of momentum going into Seville, going into the Chelsea the following week, because we've got those three wins under our belt in the week in the space of a week off the back of the Tottenham debacle. So you just don't want to start regressing back into the negativity that we were in after Tottenham.
Well, Alan's probably the first midfielder on the team, isn't he, now at this stage?
Wijnaldum?
Yeah.
No, he's been
at
left
home.
Out of games. At home, yeah, away from home, no.
No, I don't. But we're playing at home. I think it's a toss up between. I think they'll play two of them three, almost guaranteed. And I don't think Wijnaldum's the one that's going to miss out. It's going to be Jan or Henderson.
That's what I'm saying. And that was my point that I was making. In this, if you've Coutinho fit, you've got Wijnaldum fit, you've got Henderson fit, you've got Chan fit, right? You're only going to play three of those four.
Yeah,
I think Coutinho might miss out, to be honest, I don't think Coutinho
will play, but I think like Sturridge might play, you know, and Salah might play up top.
This is what we're debating. So Gav, does Clavin start?
Oh, that's not a bad question. He does, yeah, he does start. You know, Lovren, I don't know, I'm not saying any more, and I'm fucking sick of him. But like the lad said,
they're harshing the player of the month for October.
What?
They're harshing the player of the month for October.
Did they do a big reveal, like, you know, with his trophy and everything?
Of course they didn't.
Did they not? No,
because that's... They actually gave him a joint award with Salah. Even the club said, fuck
this. Videos of Salah last month, yeah. There wasn't that in a lot. I can't remember seeing it.
As far as I know, they actually did a joint award with Salah.
Yeah. What did Salah get?
Salah just said, look, you just keep the trophy, right? We'll just accept that your man was voted player of the month and we'll just say his boat won it, right? So he was like, yeah, granted.
Oh, yeah, they were nearly winking on screen. Yeah, and like, yeah, okay. But no, like Ray said, it's important to win this game because, you know, this thing that comes up about international breaks and what are people like after, you know, it's fucking mad, like, you know what I mean? It's just a week off, do you know what I mean? But it is important that we win it because... It probably is, you're right, the easiest game on paper. So you want to win that. You want to go to Seville and get it. I think the Chelsea one is huge. I think if we get through the week unbeaten and beat Chelsea, you know, it's massive for the season.
Sounds like 13-14.
Yeah, well, we should have just taken the draw we were being given on the plate that day, but we didn't.
Just get through the week and make sure we don't get beaten by Chelsea.
No, I think if they beat Chelsea, I think it's massive. I really do. With regards to the team, I agree with Andy. I think Wijnaldum's in the team for me. I think Wijnaldum and Jan stay in the team. I'd nearly go with the team that played at West Ham. That's being honest with you. Yeah, I think the way we played, really fluid. I can't believe it. But no, it was really good the way, you know, players changed positions and we were really good. The only worry I'd have is, like you said earlier, Southampton are going to pack that midfield. They're probably going to put three really compact in there, you know. Tadic and Charlie Redmond, as Andy said, on both sides. So you probably will look to put three in there rather than, you know, two and pushing Salah up beside Firmino, making a kind of a 4-4-2. I'd probably go with the West Ham team. If I wasn't, though, it would be Wijnaldum, Jan, Coutinho, and Oxlade-Chamberlain out and move Salah. So that's the team.
Salah in for Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, Salah moving out wide and leave it at that. Stop making
plays. Harsh on Oxlade-Chamberlain after he scored his minimum goal against Joe Hart, the worst goalkeeper in Europe.
Yeah, I think you have to score on your first shot first before
instead of fucking Mr. Holyman, just where the ball just goes through. I can't understand Joe Hart. Anyway, that's a separate question and a separate
thing. Getting that game for England again the other night?
Getting any game ever. Yeah. And the love that he still gets as England's number one is beyond me.
You know the way he's like goalkeeper for years now?
Yeah.
And so he's had a goalkeeper coach for years now. Yeah. Isn't it mad the way that none of the goalkeeper coaches, like whether it's at England or Man City or wherever he's played, have not said to him, stop parrying it out in front of your goal.
Do you not agree?
No one said that yet.
or see that thing at the near post, you can save the ball there if you want as well. Because he's beaten at the near post.
There's a long list of England number one goalkeepers who like to parry out and also get beaten at the near post. Ian Walker, Chris Woods, Joe Hart, Peter Shilton when he was 52 still playing a goal for England, David James, Paul Robinson. Like it's almost an English goalkeeping thing that that you ignore the near post because nobody ever scores there, and that you parry it back out because nobody ever scores.
Yeah, because that goal that Matip scored the other week, people were saying, oh, a good reaction. Say, well, I thought he was horrendous. I thought you should have caught the fucking thing. I was like, you got your two hands to it. Like,
that was Grizz.
Your two hands are on it.
You've been an expert in goalkeeping.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your hands. Yeah. Can you shape your hands in such a way
to flick it
around? It actually goes 45 degrees as opposed to 90 degrees.
Well, it depends on... genuinely, it depends. When you're doing all your training and stuff, you do work on...
Pushing it, and
changing the direction of the ball and trying to change it to areas where there's nobody running into. Now, look, you're talking fractions of a second, right? Yeah. But if the ball is coming in, the one thing you're told not to do is parry it straight back into players in front of you, right? So push it away. So when you turn your hand, you're actually opening the back end of the palm of your hand to flick it in that way. Otherwise, you're going to push it straight back out in front of them, right? Yeah. Schmeichel does it very well. Actually, Randolph did it very well against Denmark during the week. Because the ball comes
Most goalkeepers seem to do it.
It's pushed it to the side. Yeah. You push it out towards the thing as opposed to back into the danger area. Sometimes you've got there's no hope. The ball has gone behind you and you're literally just pulling the ball back out in front of you and you're just trying to get away from the ball as much as you can. Yeah. And you're hoping then the second phase, either your defenders or you can save the second shot. But yeah, he has a flaw. It was shown last year when he was in Torino. Every time, long deep crosses. Another one is he has a massive flaw with this on long deep crosses. If you lock a long deep cross in against Hart where he has to stretch at the back post, he nearly always parries it back down in front of him, right? And he conceded three identical goals, ball into the back post, two hands up in the air, and he pushed the ball back into the middle of his goal.
Why doesn't he go up one hand and just let it hit off his hand like you said?
Or knock it out for a corner. Because it's just, I don't know whether he thinks he can catch the ball and then the last minute he's at too much of a stretch and he can't, and he's basically he doesn't want to knock it in behind him in case the goal is there and he's lost his position in the goal.
Well, I mean, it's so lucky we've got three such great goalies, isn't it? You know, thankfully we haven't got any of those.
Dropsy, flopsy, and
poppy. Some people have
and Bogdan.
Maybe some people have like are double jointed, like their wrists and all. Maybe he's no jointed.
Then it's just rigid.
Yeah.
Fluid.
He'd be a great baseball bat, wouldn't he? Just no baseball bat, just his arms. Just his rigid arms being swung.
I genuinely put anywhere four goalkeepers over him.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I genuinely would like
There's no improvement.
Like the one that always got me was Lallana at Anfield when we beat them just after the League Cup final, was it? And we beat them.
And they beat us, but we beat them afterwards.
Lallana hits a shot from about 30 yards out, and it's going about 8 miles an hour. And he's so slow getting down to it. And you can see the City fans behind the goal, like going.
But Suarez used to take free kicks from 40 yards and always score. It was just, I've got enough room to curl it around the wall and let it roll really slowly. And your man eventually dives just after the ball has passed him, and it's just like, oh.
And of course, he didn't play in the final, did he?
No, he
had a blinder, didn't he?
If he had played, we would have won the League Cup.
Destined to come to Liverpool as well, do you know that?
At one stage?
There was a lot of that.
There was a lot of calls from.
I think it was well happening.
I was having a fucking breakdown when it
was happening. If Brendan Rodgers hadn't got sacked, Joe Hart would be a Liverpool Football Club player at this moment in time.
I'd well believe it.
Anyway, going back to ourselves, we won't talk about the goalkeeping position because I think we all know that Dropsy is in goal at the weekend, right? And we can just hope for the best that he doesn't do anything stupid. Hopefully the defence doesn't allow any shots.
Well, he's not under pressure. That's the other thing, isn't
but
it?
But it's the lack of concentration when he's not under pressure then kills us as well. But look, going back, so the real question mark then is at the top end of the pitch. It's how we line up. We're more or less, do we think we go back to the three because we do have our three amigos that are at the top end with an attacking look to the midfield as opposed to, you know, two holders or whatever and trying to sit deep and call them, because they're not going to come on to us there. If we sit deep, it'll be like the England-Egypt game in 1990 or the Ireland-Egypt game in 1990 where one team sat in one half and the other team sat in the other half. Ireland-Holland in 1990, that's what it was. After we found out that England had scored against Egypt and both teams basically just stayed in their own half and passed it amongst themselves as the ball went out. Do you, Andy, is there any call for you to do anything wild here? Or do you think with that we'd have enough?
No, there's nothing wild about doing what they've just previously done. Personally, I think they'll stick with that shape where you're going to kind of play two of them three centre midfielders. So for me, it would be probably Shan and Wijnaldum. And then in front of them, you can't really just reintroduce Coutinho back into the team. I can't see it.
I know, but at the same time, he is such an important player on that pitch.
Yeah. Probably comes down to,
especially in these type of games where you're playing at home and you need to break a team down in front
of you. Yeah, that's probably the point. I think if this was West Ham away this weekend and Coutinho's coming back, I think he probably doesn't come back in because you're looking for that pace, that all-out raw pace that you're seeing from us. Whereas this game will be, you're probably looking at Southampton's back four and these three really, really close to the centre-halves. And the two lads out wide really close to their fullbacks and hoping to hear the striker and play balls off them or get something from it. I don't know. I still think he goes Firmino, Salah, Mane. Yeah, I still think he goes with that three. Mm-hmm. And I think Andy's right. It's Wijnaldum, Jean, but it's just who you pick with him. I don't know who he picks with him.
Yeah, I mean, you can play Firmino up top with Salah and Mane in behind with Coutinho or Ox. You know, there's loads of options. I just don't.
You could probably find if Coutinho did start, and he was the forwardest forward midfielder, that he could kind of drift left, and you probably find Salah from the left going into the centre.
Or Mane
with Mane, in there. or they could take turns of saying, right, listen, you go right and I'll go centre. They could mix that up a little bit. But it's always the same, isn't it? It's going to be getting a goal and not letting them get to an hour without a nil all.
I want to throw something in. The game against Seville is a huge game on Wednesday, Tuesday, the day, one of the days.
Tuesday.
So, looking at it, we're away from home.
Yeah.
We likely want to set up as strong defensively as we possibly can, because I'd imagine we're expecting Seville to come at us and we'll probably try play on the counter. Right? We've got a short turnaround in terms of games from Saturday to Tuesday. Mane's had a slight hamstring pull. Mm-hmm. Is there an argument that you don't start Mane? Because you want to give him still a bit more recovery time, having flown back from Africa as well and only getting over a hamstring injury. That if we have a habit of rushing players back from injury and then them being out for twice as long because they redo the injury.
The only reason Mane starts if Klopp feels he's fully fit, and that's what happened against West Ham. He announced that he was, all of a sudden he was in the squad again. He might be good for 20 minutes and he started the game. I think we've got away with it, like kind of dodged a bullet that he's went on international duty. He had to be pulled back and had to be assessed and everything else, and everyone's shitting themselves, and it turns out he's okay. But I'd say
want to play because it's his former club.
Yeah, but he'll get 20 minutes or whatever. That's more than likely. I think if there's any concerns over his fitness whatsoever, he'll be just giving them extra few days. And then you'll start, obviously, in Spain.
So does that then not open up the space that allows you to play Henderson and Chan and play Coutinho back in your front three?
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I mean, that might be the way he goes with it. I mean, if he's kind of got that concern and he wants to save Mane for Tuesday. The thing about Tuesday, if I'm not wrong, if we win that game against Seville, we've won the group, haven't we, I think? So that means that last game against Moscow is a dead rubber. So you've almost got a bit of flexibility there with playing, blooding in some other players and almost having kind of a rest midweek sort of thing. So there's a lot to be gained by winning that second game. So if there is some concerns about Mane, then maybe you do just err on the side of caution, and if we need him the last 20 minutes because the game is still in the balance, then you bring him on and you have him. If we got the game in the bag, you keep him on the bench, you took him away and you play him on Tuesday.
The storage
then
as well.
He
started against West Ham.
And again, storage, if you're going to play,
he started against Huddersfield. He didn't start against West Ham.
He didn't get on the pitch against West Ham,
no. Because he scored 2-2, hadn't he? Against Huddersfield and Maribor.
Everyone was expecting him to start against West Ham because he scored that great goal against West Ham last season. Well, the one question I'll put is then, does Gomez not start? Because you're going to set up a bit more defensively against Seville away from home, and you know that Southampton are going to sit deep. Do you play Trent in this game and play Gomez away from home when you want to be defensively more compact?
No. Like, Gomez has started to look like he's... Like, at one stage early on in the season, it was looking like Trent and him are sharing that right-back position. Mm. Like, Gomez will just play. If he's fit, he'll just play. There's no reason to say just because the Wednesday game is more defensive, like, he has to play the Wednesday game. I think Tuesday. He'd probably play both. Because, if Moreno bombing on there, and Gomez is kind of just been dropping into the middle a bit more. So it just makes us a little bit more stable if you lose the ball.
If you are going to rotate and you are going to, the Southampton game is the obvious one for Trent, because then you've got obviously Seville and Chelsea coming up. So
And Gomez has just been declared the world's greatest centre-back.
Yeah, and he has played some minutes international as well. So, yeah, potentially, but you would hope he's got the legs for the three games in a week.
Mm. I think Southampton's biggest threat will be White, Tadic and Charlie Redmond. I think Gomez or Gomez starts. I think he starts because their biggest threat is White. I genuinely believe that. I think they're going to look to get the ball to them White players when they manage to get hold of it and trigger up the park with it. So I think Gomez starts on Saturday, and I think he starts on Tuesday as well.
And does Tobo Robertson start then on Saturday?
No, I don't think he gets
Moreno
at
just
all.
Plays the three.
I think Moreno starts the three. I don't think Henderson starts at the weekend, but I think he might start in Seville.
Yeah,
I think when it comes to the Seville game, he might revert back to a
deeper.
You know, yeah, like a Jan Henderson, Wijnaldum three that he's trusted
I think,
a lot in
I think
games.
Milner comes in.
Yeah,
on
he might do, but like we're talking
I'm not
about,
convinced Wijnaldum plays midweek. To
yeah,
be
but the only thing is if we're talking about Mane and what has he got it in him, I think he goes with Mane this weekend, and instead of using him in Seville or starting him in Seville, he may go with them three lads in the middle of midfield and move Coutinho up with Firmino and Salah and play that way in Seville, you know. That's just the way I think I'll go.
Lallana, boys, it's his old club. He grew up there, grew up in Bournemouth and then moved to Southampton and they turned him into a footballer. He came all the way through from the Vauxhall Conference right the way through with Southampton. But like, I'd say he's mad to get a few minutes at the weekend. Does he get a bit of a run? Does he get 10 minutes, Andy?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's been training, 2 or 3 days, and Klopp likes to have them training 4 days or something like that. So, yeah, I think he's...
Ray, Oxlade-Chamberlain, grew up in Southampton.
There's so many connections, isn't there, really? It's crazy, yeah.
Do you think he gets a few minutes against his old team?
He's probably going to be on the bench, isn't he? Yeah. I would say. He might be a candidate for playing the Seville game. Yeah. He may bring him on. It depends what the game situation's like, doesn't it? At the end of the day, definitely can see Lallana getting on if we're winning the game handily enough. Gets a standing ovation for coming on 10 minutes to go.
Well, hasn't Southampton fans reacted badly to him playing?
Yeah. He's the one that him and Lovren have got it really bad. Yeah. Cloyne, they weren't bothered over. No. Lambert, you know what I mean? Like 5 million. Like what the fuck went happened there?
Suarez is replacement.
I wouldn't be sure what.
No,
I think they've forgotten that they sold Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Know,
it's been
Lallana
a while, hasn't it?
He was only 11 when Kevin Spacey sorted that deal.
They give absolute dog's abuse to Lovren every time.
Yeah,
every time. You know,
because I think they were the two lads that kind of forced it. You know, when the Cloyne deal was happening, it was more there's the money. Yeah, we're happy, and it happened. Whereas these two lads kind of did push it, but. Look, they're professional footballers. You go out and play. Lallana, I think, will go on the bench. I think Solanke might miss out on the bench, I think, at the weekend.
He may.
Yeah, I think he will go with Sturridge and he might have Solanke, Lallana, Oxlade-Chamberlain probably on the bench as your attacking options, you know. But you just have to beat them. Just go and beat them, you know. If you play well enough and you have enough options there, you know, I think we win the game. I think we win a handy.
Okay. Let's do predictions. Gav.
3-0 Liverpool.
Right.
2-1 Liverpool.
That's a poxy score.
Late goal, nervy ending. Yeah, late goal for them, nervy ending, yeah.
Andy?
5-1 Liverpool.
5-1?
Yes. Do us a favour, Andy, will you? I love when you do this. Name the score as well. Go on.
I don't even know who's going to play.
But it doesn't matter. Go on.
Right, so...
All the ex-Southampton boys.
Right.
Cloyne.
Ricky Lambert.
Cham. Chan's going to score a goal.
Okay,
will it be one of those daisy cutters from about 45 yards that you think is great when you see them force and then you look at it again and go, why didn't the goalkeeper save that? It's not going that fast.
No.
No?
It's going to be a bicycle kick.
A bicycle kick, is it?
Yeah.
Wijnaldum's going to score.
Sean Wijnaldum.
Firmino's going to score a proper goal, not a header like.
Yeah.
One of those where he gets it like in and go and you expect him to miss and just bursting into the top corner.
Yeah.
And Salah's obviously going to score. That's four now.
That's four, yeah.
And then Salah's going to score again.
Oh, Salah's getting two.
Yeah, because I'm going to captain the shit album in his fantasy.
Yeah.
Captain the shit album.
Triple captain. Yeah. The whole lot.
Moreno's due a goal, I reckon. I wouldn't be surprised if Moreno pops up with a goal.
I think more likelihood of Moreno scoring against Seville, which is his old club, than you have against Southampton.
Yeah, I'm trying to even think of the team now I'd pick before I try... put any scores on that 3-0. I'd fancy Coutinho if he played, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, I'd fancy him to score one. I think with them deep, I think one of them shots has to go in.
1-0.
Yeah, of course you fucking do. Yeah.
I think it does.
That's usually my mind.
We agree on one goal. In fact, we agree on 2 goals. I just think we'll score 4 more.
Before I prove that Phil hates football.
I do. What time is the game on Saturday?
3:00. It's the best time.
It's not the best. It is the best Saturday. Time. There's lots of things to do on a Saturday. Sunday, there's nothing to do.
Half five on a Saturday is the best time, isn't it?
Half five isn't bad. You can get yourself ready to go out for a few drinks.
Yeah, you can watch the match, watch the game, and have a few drinks, and then
pre-drinks,
which is next week.
Then go out
fair,
and tell people that we're on a run. You know what I'm trying to say? Or tell them how we're just unlucky.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, that, which one? Yeah. You know? Saturday half five.
Okay, triple shots, lads. So the first one up is this week in the Daily Mail. I noticed an article, right? It was just ahead of the England versus Brazil game.
Is this a question or is it you?
It is a question, right? And it asked the Sports Mail's reporters to pick their favourite ever Brazilian footballer. Now, this is the favourite ever Brazilian footballer, right? Two of the people, Dominic King and Ian Herbert, chose Lucas Leiva, right? Okay. Fuck knows why. Pelé, Zico, fucking Ronaldinho, Josimar, who forget at the 86 World Cup, Socrates, Careca. The list is endless.
Fat Ronaldo,
skinny Ronaldo, Ronald Rivaldo,
Danielson,
Leonardo when he elbowed your man in the 94 World Cup. It goes on and on and on. Lucas Leiva.
Was your man that went from somewhere in Holland to Middlesbrough?
Emerson.
No, he was a striker and he scored about 80 goals in a season in Holland and he came over.
I know the fella you're talking about.
And he was fucking brutal, he was.
Yeah, and when he signed, everyone thought he was going to be
Alves. Something like that, yeah.
Alves.
He's my favourite.
He's your favourite. Yeah. I was just baffled. It might seem an odd choice, but he was such an excellent, intensely thoughtful individual to meet. Your favourite ever. How is that playing football?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but Pele's out.
Who was the nicest bloke? Who was the nicest Brazilian footballer?
Who was the keeper they had
Taffarel.
I used to stand there and think to myself, like, he's got the easiest job in the world, hasn't he? You know, he never had any pressure on him or anything like that.
He wasn't that good,
but he didn't need to be that good. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was a spectator.
How does that happen in Brazil?
What, you become a goalkeeper? Yeah. You just can't do the tricks.
Is it like the referee in the schoolyard?
The referee couldn't play in goal and couldn't do any tricks, so he ended up as the referee. And then all the lads who couldn't do the tricks end up in goal. And then all the rest of the lads just do tricks. Can't get the ball off them. Yeah, you have to be able to do 78 keepy uppies without stopping.
On the beach?
Yeah, on the beach with a concrete block.
Dodging the muggers.
Yeah. So, Andy, who was your favourite Brazilian player ever?
Roberto Carlos.
Oh, left back club.
Thinking of crossbars for 20 years.
He wasn't, though. He had that one free kick, never scored a shot after that again.
And he did, in fairness.
I used to love him. Like, even though he was a bit of a myth. You just imagine he scored a lot of free
kicks. His toys were huge.
His toys are mental.
Mental toys.
They were illegal.
He could kick the ball so fucking hard. It was a joke. And I used to love kicking the ball hard.
Just because of that.
Just because, like, kind of thought I was him a little bit.
But he didn't. He looked like to win. Give you the image of him.
It's better than Roberto Carlos.
His toys are mad like his.
Your toys are as
him or him. Him or Ronaldo.
The real one?
Yeah.
The proper one.
Yeah, Ronaldo. Like, I love Rivaldo. Ronaldo. Yeah. The two of them.
I loved Ronaldo, quality. But I was never allowed to have Ronaldo on the street because he was one of the lads' favourite players, you know what I mean? So I always just picked Carlos.
Did you ever notice about Carlos' free kicks, though? He'd say, oh, the power. But I think people in the wall was like, no, fuck this. I'm not getting away. And they just get out of the way and it goes straight through the gap and in. And he did hit a ball. Fucking
Ronaldinho doesn't get the love he deserves. Ronaldinho was one of the most enjoyable footballers to watch. And for that reason, he's one of my favourite footballers of all time. Yeah. He just loved doing mad stuff on the pitch.
And the best thing he ever done was he towed the fucking ball into the net against Chelsea.
Yeah.
You know, like, when you're a kid playing football, you weren't allowed to tow it into
the net. No, he toe-bogged it.
You know what I mean?
Big toe-bogged
it. And he done it against Chelsea in the Champions League. I thought, you know what? With all the skill he has, he just stood there and went, you know what, fuck this, and just gave it his... Just towed it into the net.
Like, I'm so good, I can even control toe-bogs. Because you couldn't control a toe-bog, you just hit it and hoped, right?
Yeah, there's some unbelievable clips of him as well, like, before games warming up. Like, you know, you see the Maradona one, which is ridiculous as well.
Yeah.
But there's one where he's... I don't know where he's playing.
He has Barca gear on, isn't
he? Yeah, he's warming up. It looked a bit like Celtic Park, maybe not.
Yeah.
And he kicks the ball up and it comes down and it just kills instantaneous. But the best thing about it was, I think it's a coach comes near him and he just two movements with the foot. Yeah. And it hits through the fella's legs and everything. It was ridiculous.
And he just nuts them.
But like the one thing about Ronaldinho is like he won it all, had it all, right? And then he's just like
just loves parties.
Oh, just going to party now. Like, yeah. Literally here, this, I must win. The will to win is always instilled in champions and the whole lot. He was just like, done it all, lads. Now it's party time. Yeah. You want to achieve, I've done it.
He's still playing, isn't he?
He turns up every so often, but he's like, he's an ambassador for Barcelona now, so he turns up every so often there as well. Like, and like, when, do you remember the story about when he was meant to go to United, like, and he was asked by helicopters? I'd say he went, I'm not going there, but let's have a bit of laugh for it.
Yeah,
could you imagine if he said, yeah, you can have the helicopter to go to London? Like, but, fantastic.
He should have asked for a couple of pandas just to see what the reaction would be.
All sorts of fucking stuff, yeah.
It's a shame he didn't see the likes of him and a few other players, really. And, you know, we won't see the likes of Messi in the Premier League. It is a shame, really.
I don't know about the Messi thing. The Premier League came after him.
Yeah.
Well, Messi could end up in the Premier League.
Manchester City.
I don't think he finished out with Barca.
Oh, I think he goes to City.
I have to say,
Ronaldinho, the one thing I love about him is the whole party thing. So he goes to Milan and sort of half tries and does it, but enjoys the bit of crack in Milan. And the fans weren't happy. Sometimes he was caught out drinking before matches and out in nightclubs. But he didn't become an alcoholic or anything. Like, you hear the sad stories about Adriano and all, where like he couldn't control it and went mental.
But that was his father, wasn't it?
There was a lot of issues there, and he suffers with depression and everything. Yeah. Does Adriano?
He was also
a fucking incredible footballer when he broke through as well. Like, he was like a young Ronaldo. His story is actually a very sad one
about his father and where he actually, he came from the slums, like, you know, really, really bad area.
But then I read that Ronaldinho signed for Athletic Mineiro, right? And the reason he signed it was because the beach culture was brilliant. So he literally played three seasons at Atletico Mineiro.
I can't believe he didn't go to Scary's Town.
He literally went there because
blue flag.
He loved the bars and the beach life and the whole lot. And you know what? He won the Copa, not the Copa America, their Champions League equivalent.
Libertadores or something.
Yeah, the Copa Libertadores with Atletico Mineiro, because he loved the beach culture so much.
Yeah.
Like, to me, when you've achieved everything, you look at Messi and say, what brings you joy? Playing football. No, that's it. That's why Ronaldinho is a better footballer than you, fella. Because you just don't understand. Like, even with Ronaldo, I understand Ronaldo, like, what, like making clones of himself and having test tube babies. And everything. He's mad. He's gone completely mad now that he's so good and he's made so much money.
What else does he do? Like?
What else does he do? Like, I don't want him to be sad. I want him to be mad. Like, Suarez bites players on the pitch. He's mad on the pitch. You love him for that, right? Mm. Like, there's nothing mad about Messi, bar his beard.
Mm.
Now that's why he's not good enough. That's why he's never going to be my favourite Brazilian, because he's Argentinian as well.
Yeah. Messi will never be my favourite Brazilian.
Good point.
Right, one
for you, lads. This is a sensible one. Your pre-match Anfield pub of choice, and then pubs in the city for the after-match shenanigans. Ray, you'll be a good man here, being from the area.
Tend to end up in the Sandon, to be honest.
Before the game,
yeah. Just because it's fairly reasonable to get a pint in within probably 5 minutes.
And
some of them are disaster zones. Mm. The Arkles, like, it's hit and miss, because sometimes, like, it's a big one for the away fans. So sometimes they just get a little bit too fucking annoying. You know, there's absolutely shit loads
Stoke
of
fans.
Them.
Stoke fans especially are the tree heads.
Tree heads.
And to be honest, I don't tend to stick around after the game. It's usually head off now. Might be a bit different now. I'm a day tripper, I suppose. So I'd just be heading into town. And
whereabouts in town would you go?
Nowhere specific, really, to be honest.
You're just not prepared to take his Annie Ted along somewhere.
Nowhere specific.
I've been there many times. We normally gravitate towards like the biggest cringy fucking slums of bars that we can find that's cheap.
But did you go into the Globe with us one morning for the karaoke before one of the matches?
That was me.
We went in the Globe. I can't remember who it was. We went into the Globe. You know the one that's down beside what's the name of the shopping centre?
Oh, what, Liverpool one?
No.
St. John's.
The St. John's. There's a pub just there at the Globe. Karaoke on at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, for all the Alkies,
people.
What?
The
Alkies.
The old people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had people up singing, didn't it? It was great crack.
I always enjoy the Arkles. Don't know why I like being in the pub where the away fans are, but it's just something interesting about going over and seeing the away fans.
All the time, you fucking hoolie. Gav, what's your choice?
I'm brutal with names of pubs. Really, really bad. Like, and to be honest with you, being over to Liverpool a handful of times in the last couple of years, Usually when I get out of the ground, I try to get away from it. And back into the city centre, you know. I remember bringing her with me one time, years ago. And
she didn't enjoy the strip club.
She didn't enjoy that before the game. but she enjoyed the game, you know, but she hasn't come with me since. But like the lad said, you go back into town and wherever looks like it's decent, you just go for it. You just want to drink, don't you?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't think people are picky. Like,
no, we went after the United game. We stuck around and we went in the Albert. Now, I would never have been in the Albert before. It's obviously sort of like steeped in history and whatnot. Yeah. It was like a time warp, really, wasn't it? I mean, it's how that situation is where that pub is now. Like, it's literally in no man's land, you know, between the new club shop and the cop. They wanted big money, apparently. I heard that they wanted like close to like $1 million for it, basically, and you know, knowing where it is in the area and stuff like that. Like, it's hardly prime real estate apart from the fact that it's where it is like, yeah, sort of sandwiched behind the stand there. But the beer was shocking.
The maddest thing about it, I thought, was remember we stood up the fireplace,
yeah,
and the lads. So there was seating area to your left and seating area to your right, and on the right hand side it was all just day trippers with a half and half scarves, and then the other side was like all locals, like, and proper scally locals. All the tickets were coming back there,
yeah,
and you were kind of, we were just right in between, and I could just picture, like, 10 minutes after we left, like, just fucking glasses fucking assholes in there.
You got the nothing out of there.
But maybe they just tolerate it. I don't know. I just couldn't believe it. I'd say they would,
because it's the industry.
It was a bit weird.
What's the worst that could happen? They just bulldoze that pub down in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to pay $1 million in through the cards.
Ten it was a mistake.
The assessors would have to come in and evaluate the whole thing, and yeah, they'd say, "Well,
Andy,
40 grand.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Just close the door, come back the next morning, nothing.
Just boom, new club shop.
You know, like a prefab, one of those German hothouse buildings. Just like, yeah, that's the Klopp's house.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Shh, don't
pop up chipper or something like that, you know.
The club need to be just a bit more ballsy about things.
They need to be more proactive on these sort of things, don't they?
It was like, you know,
sell it to us now. Okay.
The Kenny Dalglish stand, as it is now, was the Kemlin Road stand back then. So when they wanted to develop that, there was these two old biddies in the road that were just wouldn't sell, and it dragged out, like, literally all the houses went down around them.
Yep.
And there was just literally this house with a house on either side, and then they would not sell, and it basically took the old girls to die off, basically, before they could get that stand to start the building process. Like, it took years. It was ridiculous.
It's just where it is, isn't it? Like, you know, it's going to be a problem. Like, people talk about the Anfield Road end as well, and you know,
wouldn't happen in Russia.
Expanding a stadium when it's so close to houses and stuff like that, and like pubs and whatever else.
Yeah,
it's so hard to do anything. Like, even in Dublin,
are you advocating that they should franchise the team to a different city?
Well, look, I'm not saying like what Andy should say and start bulldozing people while they're in their houses. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But even like in Dublin, you see it go down near. Go down near the Tree Arena now and you see all these beautiful new buildings and they're brand new. And then you just see these four or five cottages on the Lewis line, and they're obviously just going, no, we're not moving, you know, so it's very hard.
But sure, look at the clout the residents had at the Aviva. And they had to build that shitty stand.
When you see when the government aren't doing anything, Andy, you don't get these purchase orders where you just go, listen, get the fuck out, you know what I mean?
No, see, this country is too tolerant to people's views. Like, if this was Russia,
yeah,
they would have just wiped out the houses. We want, you'll ruin our light. Okay, boom. There, we ruined your light. You've no lights left. Out, go and live in a flat or something.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
In Portugal, they just say, no, we own that now. Here's 50 cent. Walk away.
Yeah, I want change.
Yeah. There's your bus fare. Good luck.
Fuck off.
Now, we own it now. Good luck. We're far too liberal.
Yeah, I don't know how, I don't know what to say to that.
Whatever.
Anyway, right, Nody asks, who would win a Trippers version of MasterChef and what's your speciality? He said, I reckon Phil or Andy would win it. Now, that's bollocks, right? Now, Andy might have a chance of winning it, but I think Steve O'Daly definitely has his eyes on the MasterChef prize.
Good,
I think I know.
Where is that?
Because you know the way he's always going about, he's done this and he does this, it does his food this way and this way. Do you reckon you'd top him? Would you beat Steve in a MasterChef?
Just cooking, isn't it?
But different dishes, different styles.
Does it, well,
I'll be nowhere near a contender.
MasterChef is all like instructions and...
No, yeah, it's not just instructions. There's you have to come up with stuff yourself. Your own recipes, but then there's other bits that you have to follow the recipe.
I thought they were told to do this and this certain
way. Is this just another version?
No, they're told. Here's the dish you have to make. They don't tell them how to make it.
Right.
So you have to know how to make it yourself, or a version of it.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. I'd win.
You'd win. Yeah.
That's all you have to say. You know, you'll
World Bake Off.
Four ounces of this, 4 ounces of that. I'm well past that.
This comes from Steve-O's picture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Of the
not Steve-O's now, Matt's of his fantastic sausages, cabbage, or
but
lettuce.
Steve-O's, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you not know that Steve-O's?
No, I did,
yeah. An absolute abomination of a fucking
and the plate. Who wins?
See, I don't know if Steve-O can cook in a short time frame or to time, right?
No.
I think he can do
yeah,
like
that's the pressure
24-hour dishes hey? And smoking and all that type
slow,
of stuff. Right?
Slow cooker.
Where there's lots of preparation, everything going in, right? But if he's told you've got 1 hour to come up with a meal that normally takes 10 hours, right? I don't think he can do it. I think that's where he struggles.
But that's what happened with Bangers and Mash. The history behind that, in a different WhatsApp group with a different gang of lads, somebody was talking about their Bangers and Mash they did. And he, the next day, he's like, did Bangers and Mash, waiting to see it. Like, and he was expecting everyone to go, whoa!
The fucking state of it.
Posted this fucking thing. Like, shrivel up fucking Mickey. like, horrible cabbage. And
the cabbage was like something you'd see at a carvery at about 7:30 at night, and it's been sitting there since 2 o'clock.
It's absolutely rank. And then, like, the anemic spuds and all. He said that they have...
They were double rice cooked.
Double rice.
What the fuck even is that?
Double rice.
It's a
ricer machine. Like, so too lazy to mash.
You push it through it.
Like, it's like age. We got a garlic crusher.
Yeah. No, yeah. I use a hammer. For fingers, you know what I mean? Just bake the fucking thing and then the garlic sorted.
Yeah. If you're in the top end chefs, they get the, what's those things that look like strainers, but they're the really war version. So they pass the mash through it so that it's like this completely, it's almost a puree as opposed to a mash.
Basically, there's no lumps in the mash.
Yeah.
But sure, if you just cut all your potatoes the same size and boil them up and mash them properly,
correct.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Absolute
Do you go for a steel masher or a plastic kind of masher?
I've got three mashers.
Right, okay, yeah.
So the first
gradually gets smaller?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The force one breaks down. It's a big one from IKEA.
Is it the big round, the long
with the grid on it?
Loads of potatoes kind of go up through the middle. Yeah, so you miss a lot of it.
Yeah.
So you start off with that just to get it like mashed, like into a mashed state.
Yeah.
Right.
then into the microwave with your milk and
In the microwave then?
Yeah, milk and butter, so you're not pouring cold milk in on top of your mash.
Right.
So milk and butter, so it comes out a really skang liquid of milky butter.
Fluid. Yeah.
And but it's hot, so you're not cooling your mash, and then that goes on top, and then you go into the stage two masher, which is just normal
numbered.
No, they're just one
just
small.
Just sizes, yeah.
And then the last one's small enough. Like, it's just a small plastic one. But at that stage, the mash is down to a fairly mashed state. And then I get it into the clouds form. Yeah. And then you have to do the money shot. So you take out a little spoon of mash and you flick it against the tiles.
Right.
And if it sticks, that's your mash.
Right. And so then, is your kitchen just full of fucking mash?
Remember that one? But then you know, like the kind of halogen lights that's kind of in your kitchen, they give off 3%. A certain light.
Yeah.
Well, if you place your pot underneath, you can actually see the clouds of mash passing through the light. So that's when you know you've kind of.
And would you be, you know, the stuff you get, say, in the staff canteen, the really sort of like slop fest mash, would you be up for that? Like,
Smash like?
Yeah.
No. There's a difference between Cloud's Smash like mine.
Matt Roberts going to have a field out with those who talk about potatoes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Yeah. Tell me he was going to rob them all again.
Doesn't understand it.
They're like stodgy shite that you could kind of suck up through a straw.
Yeah.
So who we
mash you could suck up through the outside of a straw.
I do like to add things into clouds. No, I have to say I do like to add things into my mash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, like onion, spring onion.
I'd be known to show a bit of pesto into it, green pesto. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
And then also, I love throwing mozzarella into it.
Do you?
Yeah.
I like pepper. I love mozzarella.
I always have pepper. Salt and mixed herbs, and then also throw in a load of mozzarella, and it gets a really, instead of having to use cream, and it's just
so who's winning this then, out of us all, who's winning it in your opinion?
Who are the contenders to start with?
Andy and Steve are definitely the contenders.
Yeah,
right.
I can cook them.
I think Dave Thomas would be good as well, because I'd say he's very now organised.
I reckon Nilo wins it,
of course. Nilo. No. Yeah. I think you eat Nilo's dish and you've no idea.
I think while everyone else is worrying about ingredients, fucking measurements, 40 and types of mashers, Nilo's just fucking it all in there and he's going for it, and I think he just comes out. I think he has the confidence to pass it off. Gorgeous.
I think Nilo adds a load of angel dust into it, right? And we all think it's the nicest thing ever, and we have the best night we've ever
fucking
had, and
he's got
that's the best
into
stuff. Right, we'll leave it there, lads, because I'm down to 3%. Okay. Andy, I think this could be a competition we need to do something like.
A trip as MasterChef show. We were talking about doing this shit years ago.
I know,
it's
yeah.
not happening.
It's not happening.
No, you know it's not going to happen.
Maybe we will.
All right, we'll do it, but it won't happen.
We will. Right.
After the War Games.
After the War Games.
At the same time challenge. As the World Games, yeah. Yeah. As well.
Right, hang on a sec. Right, lads, that's it. That's the pod wrapped. Thanks for listening. Big thanks as ever to the Astro for letting us down here. Big thanks to skillzone.ie for sponsoring the show. Remember, get down there for all your World Games needs and stuff like that. And also, Andy's just taking shots. And so that's it. Oh, yeah, Skillzone. And then, what the fuck? fuck off. where am I with the fucking outro? Anyway, it was Gab, it was Ray, it was Andy, it was myself. We're back. Well, I'm not back next week. They're back here next week, so there's a good chance there'll be no podcast next week outside of the Fatback Four and whoever else puts them out. I'm in England, so if he's over there, how he's all getting on. And that's it. Good night.